CataractCoach.com podcast series, episode number 168, with Dr. Durval Carvalho Jr. from Brazil, innovating surgical techniques and new ophthalmic developments.
Welcome back to our Cataract Coach podcast. And today I've got a very special guest, my very dear friend from Brazil, and that is Durval Carvalho Jr. Welcome, my friend.
Oh, nice to see you today. It's a great honor for me to participate in this famous cataract coach, especially in Brazil. You were a lot of famous here.
I love to come to Brazil. Brazilian ophthalmology is on another level, I got to tell you. Now, you've been president for the BRASCRS, Brazilian Society of Cataract and Refractive Surgery. Tell us about that. Tell us about your society.
Okay, my story begins in 2022 when I was president of the BRASCRS. I have a mission. In that time, I had a mission to internationalization of the BRASCRS.
Right.
So I was looking for the genius of cataract and refractive surgery around the world. So one of my special guests that I invited was Uday Devgan.
Yeah. It was an honor. I learned so much.
Yeah. We in Brazil, the ophthalmologists like very much the film festival. They love the film festival.
Right.
So my first thought that we need the Devgan. So here must be here with us. So and the film festival we opened to around the surgeons to the world. So we created an international category. This is awesome because we receive many videos around the world, so for Asia and US. So it's very, very special. And we love this video because we believe that video is a currency, is a way that we connect very much with the, you can know how the surgeon can do about your techniques. So we in Brazil we love the new techniques. For example, scleral secondary implant. We have many good surgeons that love the secondary implant technique, like Canabrava with per flange technique, and so many.
Yeah, you have a technique also, which you pierce the happen. So if you have a single piece lens and you don't have capsular support for it, let's say it's a multifocal or torque and you want it in the eye, you have a very clever way. Tell us about this, of piercing the haptic and then making a flange. Tell me.
Yeah, so one of the challenging case is to fixate the single piece IOL. That's one challenging situation. That you have all the cataracts surgeon have all the system or have all the lens, the patient was here, was there in the operating room, but if you lose the capsule support, if you have you are planning a single piece or a multifocal or torical IOL, if you lose the capsule support, you are out. Right. So it's very difficult to talk with the patient in the next day. I had to change your plan. I had to change your IOL. So now you don't have now a multifocal IOL. You have a monofocal. You have to use eyeglasses for near. So this is for a cataract surgeon is much bad. So I developed one instrument that I called the haptic micro punch.
Okay.
The story begins with the Dr. Canabrava developed one a big punch that, but it's so big that you had to punch outside of the eye and punch the optic part. But I think it's the fixation is so far from the sclera, so it can balance more the movement and shift everything, and bend, you can tilt the IOL. So I don't believe that this is the way you to fixate the optic part. It's too far.
Yeah.
If the patient is if the eye collapse, the eye all do this
twist. Yeah, yeah.
Twist almost 100. It's flip. Yeah. It's almost a flip. So I intend that I prefer you to fixate the haptic. Mm-hmm. So, but the problem is that and after that, Micheletti developed one micro punch that you turns to inside the eye with the micro punch. But the micro punch is vertical.
Mm.
The problem was the vertical because you the proline comes straight. Oh. And the haptic is vertical, so
right.
when you fixate, you bend all the torsion, all the haptic. So it's not physiological. So that's why I developed the haptic micro punch. This is properly for haptic. This is instead of the vertical. This is a horizontal micro punch.
So, that makes a lot of sense. the original way that many years ago, we saw Conor Brava doing a punching a hole in the optic. But then the problem with that is that the sutures are so long, the fixation through the proline. And then Micheletti did a haptic punch, but the orientation was vertical, anterior of the lens to the posterior of the lens. And so then when you have the proline coming, you have to make that 90-degree turn. And that's not right. So you chained it even one more step.
Yes.
And you did it. So it's a horizontal punch. Yeah. So the sutures are perfectly straight then.
Yes.
Oh, so brilliant.
My first case, we do directly with the needle.
Okay.
With the needle, passing horizontally through the haptic. But the needle, the problem of the needle, that the way is not straight because the needle, it comes down or up.
Right.
And most of the time, you damage the haptic with needle. So I 50% I lost the IOL. So it's not good. That's the game change that I need to offer something better. So that's I developed the haptic micro punch, horizontal haptic micro punch. So it's not easy to manufacture this because it's too small.
Right.
The thickness of the haptic probably is 0.45 millimeters.
Yeah.
This thickness, all thickness. So the hole must be in the middle of this haptic high, and with 1/3 of this thickness, so
right.
It's very very small and delicate to manufacture. So I having some difficulty to find some laboratory to make this haptic micro punch. Now the Bausch Lomb, I think we have a good chance with the Bausch Lomb that we are working on it. We have to change some things in the micro punch to create one reproducible micro punch. So
yeah, so interesting how you keep evolving it little by little by little.
Yeah. We have a lot of details in this technique that I would like to talk today because they ask me in some lectures that why don't need two fixations in each haptic? Why is just one?
Right.
It's an excellent question because the hole is a very thin hole.
Okay.
And my proline is a little bit thicker. That I have, I use a proline 5.0, okay. Yes. And the Conor Brava used the 6.0. So why this my proline is thicker? Because he when passed through this hole, this is a very very tight. This is change all all everything, because when you tight, you can manipulate the hapskin and the hapskin not to turn around, you know, not move, right, because it's very tight. I call this a lollipop maneuver.
Lollipop, right? Because you put it in and it won't move.
Yes, don't move. So you can rotate, and I will rotate again also. So when I pass all the pulling inside the eye, when I adjust the IOL, I just rotating the suture, and the hapskin that I put the hapskin in the same plane of the iris.
Right.
So that's the great advantage of this technique. So
the optic is totally parallel to the iris. Parallel. Tilt of the optic at all.
Yeah. I had one case very, very interesting. There's a very challenging case. Came to me one patient with keratoconus, and he was submitted in a fake emulsification with implanted a toric monofocal IOL. So in the past, some years ago, this patient has, I think it's a dead bag, because okay, they lost the capsule support, and the IOL was subluxated. Mm. Look this case, because if you exchange the IOL for another monofocal and to fixate, you can't treat the corneal because it's the keratoconus. So what I have to do in this case? No way. So I use this piercing flange technique with this haptic micro punch, and I fixate the toric single piece IOL.
Ah, interesting.
I have a great detail here that we have to mention, because the axis of fixation is different from the axis of toric.
Right, because the toric axis is the haptic optic junction, and you're further down in the middle of the haptic, so it's a different angle. You have to compensate for that. Oh, you're right. So what's the compensation? How do you figure it out?
So I have to come out the haptic from the eye, did the micro punch, pass the 5.5 proline, okay, make a transitory flange, another haptic on the other side also, and come back with the IOL in the eye. I position in the anterior chamber, and I put the position of the axis.
Where you want
of the toric axis, and after I do the scleral fixation.
Oh,
because
smart.
It's different, the axis, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
And the IOL in the perfect position.
Beautiful. Well,
so this is a very interesting case, that the indication of the piercing flange technique was absolutely.
This is what I learned in Brazil. What you just described, how you keep advancing it, is Jeixinho Brasileiro, the Brazilian way. How do you say? I must be saying it wrong.
Here in Brazil, we have a lot of
the Brazilian way, they say, right?
Yes, they Jeixinho love it. Brasileiro. You are very famous here today.
No, I learned so much, because at your meetings, in fact, I encourage, if you're a USA ophthalmologist, take a trip to Brazil. Go to their Congress. Oh my God. I know there's a language barrier, but you will learn so much. It's all video, first of all. So you'll learn everything by seeing it. You'll see amazing things. You still do live surgery at the Brasileiro meeting, which is fantastic. And it's just a fun time. And you have the translation with the headphones. So it's every American, at least once, you should go to a Brasileiro meeting. You will have so much fun, but you will learn so much. It's a very, the Brazilian ophthalmology is really amazing. I mean, some Brasileiros are like the, among the best surgeons on the planet. And then just the way that things advance, this little ideas, or this, they call it, right, Brazilian way of doing it, the Jichincho Brasileiro.
did you like really the panic in life, the yeah. surgical in life?
There's a lot to learn from life surgery. In USA meetings, there's no more life surgery. But outside the US, these meetings still have life surgery, which is great. I think there's a lot to learn.
Let me explain this session to the audience.
Yes, please.
Yeah, because I see in the surgical in life, yeah, is sometimes if you challenge cases, you lost a lot of time because you lose time to change the techniques, the system. Yeah. So it becomes a little bit borders in sometimes it extend a lot the surgery. So my idea was create four operating rooms in the same time, simultaneously. We all four with challenge cases. When you put the Brazilian surgeons, international surgeons. So in that time, it was in that session, was this the first session that trying this new model. So in the room, we have Icarmed operating and subluxation case. And another, we have Kevin Miller operating and artificial iris implanted. So we have a lot of, we are together with Ashmi Agarwal.
Yeah.
He told me, I never saw one session like this. It's the best session I've seen.
Well, I agree. I've lectured in many, many countries. It's the first time I've ever seen that. So you're in a huge room. You've got four screens up there. You can listen to any of these live streams, see all of them happening at the same time. It was a wow. It was you just were amazed. It was fantastic.
Oh.
It was that's oh, a really, but that's a good example of like, yeah, the learning there is unbelievable. And I picked up little surgical pearls. You know, you see, there is the Brazilian way of doing things that is sometimes a lot different. So I think one thing I really admire, a lot of Brazilian surgeons do both the public health system, very high volume, very efficient surgery, and they also do private practice, which is very, very high end. It's like your private practice is the same as Beverly Hills. And so a lot of the surgeons will do both.
Yes. We have here as a... We offer to the Brazilian people a good ophthalmology. I have mentioned this in my interviews because we have aware with the have be updated in a cataract surgeon in refractive surgery also, and we have many eye hospitals in Brazil. So let me see some what happened when appeared the Phantom Second.
Okay.
In Brazil, we have in a few months of Phantom Second in diameter, in ray of 2.5 kilometers, we have six Phantom Second.
Wow.
This is crazy. The Brazilian ophthalmologists they are very serious to engage the new technology, and Nebraska is responsible for much of this because Nebraska bring us all the good guys, all the good surgeons from the world for us and the new ophthalmologists. They are very engaged with to create new techniques and to be very updated. So it's awesome. Awesome.
Yeah, it's a really, really neat learning experience there to learn the, like I said, the Brazilian way. You also were talking about you made Brasscrest basically very, very international. And also now Brazilian surgeons, there were 300 or more Brazilian surgeons at the last ESCRS in Copenhagen, Denmark.
That's it.
Amazing.
A great goal that we achieved in with Brasscrest in Majestum is to be affiliated to ECRS society. Yeah. ESCRS society. So we now the Braskers is one affiliated society of the ESCRS. So it's a very nice. For us is a great honor to join and to see it with all these guys that has the newest of Tamale. So we are developing some projects together, and each time we have studying and I learn a lot.
No, for sure. I think ESCRS is a fantastic meeting, but there are very few USA doctors, American doctors who go there. Very few. And I think that's a mistake. There's so much to learn. So yeah, if you're one of my American, most of our podcast lessons are from the USA. You should definitely go to a Braskers meeting in Brazil. You will enjoy it so much and learn so much. And you should definitely go to the ESCRS in Europe. I mean, I find those meetings so much more fun. But yeah, there's a huge Brazilian kind of, there were certainly more Brazilians at the ESCRS than there were Americans. That was like a Brazilian takeover.
In ASCRS also, yes. We have a long time, we have a session on the Brazil session of challenge cases and best of Braskers. They offer us this session, so we are very grateful to ASCRS to this opportunity also. And in Latin America, we help to create a Latanskers. Yeah. It's a new society of all the countries, almost of all countries of South America.
Right.
Now we are joining each one to create this representative of our continent. So it's and Braskers, we are together with the other societies of South America. So I think you're gonna listen a lot about the Latanskers.
Yeah, that's the for my American colleagues, that's the Latin American Society for Cataract and Refractive Surgery. So now, if you just recently, there was a paper that was in the Orange Journal, the Journal of Refractive Surgery, or Cataract and Refractive Surgery, about new IOL classifications, and it was authored by ESCRS, ASCRS, Latin American Cataract and Refractive Society meeting, and also Asia-Pacific Cataract and Refractive meeting. So now those are the big four groups, basically, that are all focused on cataract and refractive surgery. So it's growing.
I worked a lot to join of the South America societies. I work a lot in my gestant fund, and I think when you have a representative of all continents, it's easier to set into to have a pattern to establish. To create some pattern to classification of IOL and cataract surgery and visual acuity measurements. So this right. is we think we have to evaluate this all of this.
Yeah, no, it's a very smart way of doing it. But I like that all the big societies have now come together and doing this together, which is really an amazing thing. Because obviously, even out of physicians. Like less than 1% of physicians are ophthalmologists. We're very rare. We're very unusual.
Yes. Yes, but we are growing up. I think I was invited to India meeting, and I honored also in that meeting. This is all ophthalmologists India society.
Right.
I think the last month. They joined more than 10,000 ophthalmologists.
Right.
More than 10,000 ophthalmologists. Oh, this is a great.
Yeah, that meeting, the All India Society, is huge. It's like many times bigger than the American Academy of Ophthalmology. It's humongous. Unbelievable.
So you can connect all of these ophthalmologists in one way, in one group. It's fantastic. Yeah.
Well, that's the beauty now with video online, right? And this is like, we love, Indian ophthalmologists love to make videos. The Brasileiros love to make surgical videos. The Americans love to make, the European, we're all making surgical videos. We're all learning from each other. That's the best part.
It's not the best part. The video is, for me, is the way. Video, I teach to my fellows, record all of the surgeries.
Yes.
All of the surgeries. Because Oh, but this is usually a cataract, so but you can
you never
have
know.
a complication in the middle. You don't know if you know when you complicate it, it's much easier, but you can't to know how can it happen.
Right, no, you're totally right. But yeah, there's so, you know, I think we have to thank the Godfather, which is Bobby Osher. He's the one who taught us decades ago that you have to learn with video before there was internet. Can you imagine that?
Wow. Oh, Bobby Osher is the grandfather. Yeah, this is the grandfather.
He's the best.
My first time in ASCRS meeting was you know my age, but my first time is 1997.
Okay.
Oh, it's a great age, because it was born in the new techniques of FACO and Bob Washer. Oh, it's all the session of Bob Washer. There's no space to sit.
Yeah.
Sure. It's like your session today.
I think it's just, we're visual people. We're off the mouse, we're visual people. Which one thing to learn it, read a book about a technique. There's another thing to see a video. You show me, I can learn it fast.
Yeah. Oh, yes, video. The vision, much better than the words.
Right.
And at that time, I saw, I followed Akahosh with Pre-Shop.
Oh, sure.
Quick Shop. This is a lot of Stop and Shop.
Right.
By Paul Cook, you have a lot of techniques growing up and born in that time. So there's and the Howard Fine,
right?
With the flip shop.
All those kind of things. Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing! It's amazing! It's wonderful.
It was a magical time. Yeah, the late '90s, early 2000s. Different techniques of nucleofractus were being developed. So we had Nagahara doing the chop. You had Paul Koch or Koch doing the stop and chop. You had Howard Fine doing flip. You had the choo-choo chop and cortical cleaving, hydrodissection. It was an amazing time. It was so much to learn. And yeah, the Godfather, Il Padrino, was Bobby Osher for sure, who taught he taught the whole world.
Comparing with today, we have the fake of that song. Almost operate by yourself. It's a fantastic. This new unit, system. Yeah. Doing FACO with all control the anterior chamber and to measure the temperature of the handpiece. Yeah. So, I'm looking for this. I'm studying a lot this to avoid to thermal burn in the incision. I like the code FACO, so I low my have low parameters to not to avoid the incision burn.
Right.
So now you have a system that control for you. Oh,
right.
It's hot here. Let me lower.
Yeah, some people forget. Like when the first FACO machine I learned on was the Alcon 10,000. Then the Alcon 20,000. You remember those old machines?
Oh.
And so now you look at the modern machine. It's like, oh my gosh, this. You know, I've been using now this Unity machine. I don't work for Alcon or anything. I'm not a consultant for them. But wow, that new Unity machine, unbelievable. The amount of energy is putting in the eye is like half. Corneas are for sure clear. Even a dense cataract can have a totally clear cornea the next day. It's amazing.
That's it. In my when I was a resident of in Dr. Tadeu Civintal Institute, Dr. Tadeu Civintal is my master.
Yeah.
And that time when the FACO was beginning, and you can do in hard cataract and small pupil. Mm. You can do it. No. Do extra capsular for this case.
Right.
Okay. And so you only do a piece of cake cases. Né?
Right.
So, but in the public cataracts, most of them are hard cataracts. So that is the why I started to create the techniques for for hard cataract.
Right.
So this is a very nice, I created in that time the Bishopper technique, because the problem of the Negro cataract, it's not cracking in the bottom on the base. So
yeah, the posterior plate is too thick.
Yeah. Oh, yes. So I positioned the Bishopper at the base of the bottom of the posterior cortical, and to crack this cataract. So but now you have this and I told I have talked to you this because I spent 10 minutes the ultrasound.
Wow.
That is that time to do a cataract, a Negro cataract. So now, today you have a very powerful ultrasound system, and you have Luis Scafi Ultra Chop.
Yeah.
So it works very nice. It works very nice.
Yeah, there's so many innovations there. I also like you like to fine tune things. So like you were saying, you were fine tuning or adjusting your phaco parameters to do cold phaco. But you also had something very recently, which I thought was brilliant, which is what you call your X-ray filter. Tell us about, this is a brilliant thing, and you got to tell us about it because people don't realize yet. I have a video coming on Cataract Coach, which people will see, but it's brilliant. It's a way of seeing things we've never seen before.
Well, the story begins with, I love the camera also, like you.
Yeah.
And I was looking for the 3D. I started the 3D with the retinography, stereoscopic of the optical nerve. So I tried to take a picture from one angle and for another,
mm-hmm.
a little bit far from the other. And I like to understand that this system, how it works, to create a 3D picture. So I bought a semi-professional camera,
okay.
and go to the Rome, to the Europe, and I started to take a picture in 3D. So you have a Coliseum, take a picture here, and point the target in the middle, and still a little bit, and took another picture. So I was creating a 3D picture on this tourism points. So I love this 3D for a long, long time. And I start to record the 3D, putting in the two cameras 3D in both sides of the microscope. Oh. To record in 3D.
It's wow.
My first time that I could do this, I record the Intrepid sleeve from the Alcon when I hear that technology. So in that time I was recording 3D with two cameras, but not assisted. When after that I'm following the True Vision at the ACRS. Exposure saloon, and I was fantastic. The quality of that vision in True Vision. When they come to us, and where Alcon bought this joined with the True Vision, and we could try it for first time in Brazil. I tried. And October of 2017.
Oh, wow. Almost 10 years.
I think I was the first cataract surgeon 3D. And, it's really... Oh, no, just for retina surgeon. Are you kidding? Because I'm looking for this technology for a long time. So just for retina surgery. No. So I started to use it in cataract surgery. Always on. It's awesome because you have a big eye in your TV screen, and you have all the digital advantages of this surgery. So, but when they started using the filter for the surgery, And I never accept everything of the laboratory gives to me. So it's possible to change these settings. Yes, it's possible. Oh, so I like to customize my filter. So I like to change all the parameters. All the parameters, I like it very much, the monochromatic filter. So right. I enhance the contrast, and it changed everything with this new setting of that I called X-ray filter. I compare this video. I compare with all others filters that comes with the annuity, but I think it's my filter is much better. So this opened the surgery for me. You can see more details of the surgery.
Right.
If you do a high magnification, also together with the X-ray, you see the fibers of the crystalline lens.
Yeah.
You see the whole thing. So it's like a sniper.
Yeah.
A sniper,
yeah.
You can see.
You can see the. Like so basically, on the Ingenuity, I've not tried it yet. I have to try it. I have your settings. I have your video, which we have on Cataract Coach. But yeah, it's basically changing the settings and going monochromatic. So it looks black and white or gray. That's why you call it X-ray, but it's not really X-ray. And then the filter basically enhances the contrast so you can see slight details. Like you said, the fibers of the crystalline lens, you can see just, and when you inject viscoelastic, you can inject BSS, you can see the stream of the fluid. The visualizations, there are things that I had never seen before, which is really wild. I think your video won like the grand prize in the film.
Yes, the ECRS Film Festival in the last year. It won one of the prize. And for faking, well, I never know when I take out all the viscoelastic from the right. The behind the faking. Well, so now I give a high magnification, put the X-ray filter, you can see the OVD come out to the hole of the, oh, this is you change the surgery if you need more detail.
Yeah, no, it's a brilliant way of doing it. I think the thing's great. You can see a lot more. Now, are you now doing only a private clinic, or you're still doing some of those public hospital cases? Because that's how you learned all those dense cataracts, right?
Yes, we have working in both in private and in public. Yes, yes. I had a case. It's a fantastic case that a patient with they have one disease dystrophy that he don't have any movement of the okay. of the body. He move only the eye and blink, just this. All of the movements are lost. So and the patient has the head a little bit tilted for up, so it's very difficult to find the position to operate this patient. So I move the microscope heads and to follow the movement of the head, and I start operating standing.
Oh wow.
And okay. Standing, so it's possible to operate in standing. It's not easy, but it's possible. So I think 3D is a lot of advantage in this case of and have the patient has a difficult to posture.
Yeah, no, that's a great idea. I think there are a lot of things you can learn from working on those very, very difficult cases in the public system that makes you a better surgeon in the private. It's nice to have both.
Yes, yes. Because I think we are all the humans. We are all the humans, and the patients. The satisfaction of the patient when you don't have money and you can help him. Oh, for me, it's the same thing. It's a precious feeling that we have to carry with us. to help the people who don't have
Right.
the good conditions.
But also in this, when you do the public system, you have to be very efficient. There's a lot of patients.
Yes, a lot of patients we have. We see here that we have some hospitals here that operate more than 2,000 a month, 3,000. This is a lot of. It's a great amount of the cataract surgeries.
That's wild. Yeah, 2,000 a month means you're doing 100 cataracts Monday through Friday, every weekday for the whole month. 100 a day. Now,
yeah.
If we have a lot of young surgeons will ask me, the beginning surgeon, the young surgeon will say, I'm doing, now maybe 8 or 10 cataracts in the full day. How do I become more efficient? How do you get to the point where you can do 30, 40, 50 cataracts in a day? What's the advice you have?
Yes, we usually lost a lot of time between one cataract surgery and between the others. You know? You have lose time to change everything, and when they have a lot of surgery, they train to optimize this transition. So it's possible. It's possible, but the surgery time, you can't move. You have to do the each cataract surgeon must use the time of surgery that he needs.
Right. So, don't be rushed. Yes.
Yes. Yes. You can. You. I think that you can. You need to take out all of the OVDs as possible. We have to seal the incisions. Mm-hmm. I like very much to seal the incision. I don't have using the strong hydration. I use a maneuver that you like a dentition that you realign the fibers of collagen. And I think it's possible to close the seal the incision without extreme hydration. So it's very interesting. Also, I don't know what I like very much today to make a transconjunctival incision. It's a little bit
far more from posterior.
Yes, I like. Oh, I like very much. The next day, you can find the scars of the incision. It's and with this maneuver to seal the incision, no stromal hydration.
So tell me how you're making the incision. So you're going to start maybe what, half millimeter back from the limbus, 1 millimeter back behind the limbus?
Yes, half millimeters. I enter directly, okay. Passing through the conjunctiva, and start a little bit far from the limbus, half millimeters or one half or 1 millimeter, and go straight to do a big length of the incision, and now straight, and he practically penetrate automatically. So this is for me is the perfect incision that I have doing, and I no suture, no stromal hydration, neutral astigmatism, surgical induced, neutral.
Wow. Neutral. So how do you feel the incision? So you start about a half millimeter, 1 millimeter behind the limbus. You go transconjunctival. You go up towards the corneal apex. They have a long tunnel length.
Yes.
And then you enter the anterior chamber.
Yes, that's it.
And at the end of the case, how they just come out and they just it close itself?
Almost close itself. Most of the time, when I maneuver is with the cotton, when I take out the IA tip at the end of the surgery, in the same time I press a little bit, it's over. It's closed. It's closed. And I do and temporal superior temporal is my first my preference to the axis of incision, so it's a neutral. So if I have a low astigmatism, I prefer to correct with the trochee, slow trochee, I don't know. I prefer because it's more reproducible.
So to close it, all you do when you come out with the, you take the IA probe, remove all the viscoelastic, the lens is perfectly positioned. You use a cotton tip in one hand, pull the IA probe out, and then push with the cotton tip, and it's done.
It's done. It's done. Wow. In some eyes, that the collagen is so soft, like high myopia and keratoconus. That's the strength of the incision is not so good. I do a little bit more movement, to one side like a row.
Okay.
To one side to the other, and you take out all the liquid between the interface of the incision.
Interesting.
Okay, and so this is a touch and no more open. I think it's much better than stromal hydration.
Well, the hydration doesn't last. So your incision is 2.2 millimeters, 2.4. What are
2.4.
You doing?
2.4. I prefer 2.4. I use the 2.2 a lot for a long time, but I started to measure with the internal compass and. I found that they enlarge when you put the IOL.
Yeah.
So, if I enlarge, I prefer to use the 2.4, and I damage less with the 2.4 millimeters. I think it's much better.
Very, very interesting. Now, in Brazil, you have a lot more IOL choices than we have in the USA. USA, we're kind of always last person to the party when we get these lenses. What lenses are you really enjoying using now? Which IOLs? What are your common IOLs?
Well, I have using much more. I use the Alcon, Panopticus. I use a Johnson, and now as Odyssey is a new IOL from Johnson. I like it very much. The synergy some months ago, but with the Odyssey, I think it's much better because we have less halos. In my case, in my first case, I it's very much I'm trying the Galaxy IOL my brother João Marcelo Lira developed this new technology IOL that uses a spiral system to decrease the halos, and this is new for us. We have using. I have good results of this IOL. The patient they don't notice the halos. If notice is a very 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 few. So this is a new technique that's it's coming out here in the. And I include in my portfolio, man. And this is a new IOL that I'm analyzing. So we have trying a new IOL that Fentis. Do you have you listen the Fentis IOL from Teleon?
We don't have it in the US. I don't think
yes,
so.
The Fentis is very interesting. They have like a ear that's a little bit fold now like a range in the optics. It's like four years that you can connect it and at a capsule axis on a capsule axis, you know.
Oh, you can capture the like the rexus
capture in the capsule axis, so the IOL doesn't move. And this is I have been trying some fields IOLs, and we're looking for it. It's the this IOL not rotate. This for toric IOL. This is a perfect because the rotation is zero. And I have studied and research about the align the IOL with the visual axis. I usually looking for to center the central ring with the optical axis or visual axis if the patient are wake up. are wicked. And and now with this, but the patient come back to the center of the capsule bag. So you left the IOL
right where you wanted, but then shifted to the back.
They shift the moment to your usually position in the center of the bag. So with this new technology, you can do a femto capsulorhexis, capsulotomy, centered with the visual axis or the visual optic, and you have a certain that you can fix the IOL in the middle of the visual axis.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah, so the lens will stay perfectly centered wherever you centered up your femtorexis, and because it's you can line up the torque marks, you have these tabs that are holding the rexis edge, the capsule. It won't rotate out of position.
Yes, maybe this can give a really real reason to do a femto in the cataracts.
No, I think it's an interesting idea. Yeah, in the U.S., we're often last to get these new lens technologies. We're like the last place here. Now we just got approved in the U.S. this Piercy lens, so hopefully we'll have that soon. Have you used this?
Yes, we have used it a lot. Piercy is a Dolph IOL that is a very very nice, and the transition of the treated zone is very very soft. I only could recognize the treated zone with the X-ray filter. Okay. The others, I couldn't recognize it. This is a very. I talk with the laboratory guys of Johnson. Oh, you found the treated zone. It's not a. You don't have to define this. But it's because the X-ray filter is very very powerful too.
It's about 1.5 diopters. How much range do you get? 1.5.
Yeah. Yes. I usually use in my patients I use the Piercy, and I do a mini vision in a contralateral eye is zero in a dominant eye and 0.5 in contra non-dominant eye. That's it. I think it's worked very very good. I think it was all right. The patient with the 0.5 diopters has a good vision of J1, easy to read. So many of them. Okay, so it's a good option. We found it's very difficult to choose one the perfect IOL because the EDOF it's enlarged the field of vision, and the trifocal are we have a low halos, so what's the future?
you got a lot of good options, but that's just good. I think I'd rather have more options, right?
Yes. I still love to expect the accommodative IOL.
We're hopeful.
In the past, I believe that the crystal lens of Bosch Lomb, you remember the crystal lens?
Yeah.
That is a theoretical accommodative IOL. Oh, so how I tried to find this accommodative IOL. I enter with the endoscopy to see the movement.
Interesting. What did you see with the endoscopy?
Okay, endoscopy, my father bring us the endoscopy in 1996, the endoscopy for much more from scleral fixation views, more than the glaucoma treatment of that the system allow, we start to watch what happened in behind the iris, and it was possible to see the perfect position of the needle passing through the sclera and achieve the perfect point of the in the sulcus. So this is change all the scleral fixation surgery. So right. When we had the center, the IOL, we could record the vitreous and fibrosis, pushing away the haptic. So we discover a lot of things and very good images. It's like a atlas of the endoscopy. So we decided with me and my father to wrote a book about the secondary implants. We showing all of the endoscopy views of this that we found and resolved a challenge cases. So we see a lot of situations today, like the patient with uveitis after cataract surgery, and the IOL one haptic in the bag and another at the head and that sulcus.
Yeah.
Sulcus. So we another with the all the both haptics in the sulcus, but the IOL, the overall of this IOL is very smaller. Like if you remember the techniques of the old when we have a Sion haptic,
okay,
that IOL is has the smaller overall,
right?
So the lens is moving at the sulcus, so uh-huh. The lens and the endoscopy view you can see the white surface of in the posterior surface of the iris, it was white,
so where it's draping it.
Yes, you can confirm that the lens are moving and causing the uveitis. Mm. So after you see what happened, you can fix it much easier. So you can see a lot of cases of endoscopy. I had two videos about the challenging cases of endoscopy. I had one case very interesting that I will have the patient has a Coogan syndrome. Coogan syndrome is a ceratitis and a leucoma. Okay. All of the eye is sparing in the middle, in the center. Mm. They are indicated the keratoplasty for him, but it was possible to do a cataract surgery, all the cataract surgery by endoscopy.
Oh, interesting. Wow.
Yes, okay. I call it the endophakic emulsification.
Endo, yeah, because the endoscopy.
Because the microscope view is very poor, the view, the visualization. So we do in four hands because my father helped me and I helped my father. We have changed because we're was so tired during the surgery.
It's such a different view, though. I don't know if I'd understand it as well, because we're used to seeing this microscope view, and now you're going to try to fake it with an endo camera, endoscopy camera.
Yes, endoscopy camera. So that's, you I see...
It's weird, yeah.
Yes, you see the phaco tip is entering in front of the phaco tip.
Wow.
So, and do the phaco surgery, it's possible. It's not easy, but it's possible. And the IOL is very interesting because you see the quadrant entering in the eye.
Okay.
And the IOL burning in the capsule bag.
Wow.
So this is a very interesting case of that.
Wow, that's a good example, right? Of the Brazilian way. Dichinho Brasileiro. Always very innovative, very interesting technique there.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, it's brilliant. There's so much to be learned from Brazilian ophthalmologists. For if you're an American or European, make the trip. You'll have so much fun. You'll learn a lot. Durval, can you imagine? We've been talking for 1 hour already. I'm glad we're having fun. It's already been 1 hour. But I think I want to thank you for doing this podcast. Learned so much from you. Obviously, I will unfortunately not be this current Brass Chris because I'll be lecturing in Ireland. But the next year, count me in for sure. I'm always coming. I love to come.
Okay. Okay. I will invite you. I promise you. Okay.
I will come for you. I think this year is Sao Paulo. Next year will be in Salvador.
Yes. That's it. That's
okay. I've never been to Salvador. So then it'll be good for me. I'll go.
Okay. You are our favorite, one of the favorite speaker from Brazil, ophthalmologist. So.
Oh, I love to just have some fun with that. Just, it's a great time. Just not too much on the caipirinhas. But really? The Brazilian meat. Oh my gosh, the picanha. Anyway, I can keep talking. I'm gonna get. I'll be hungry here in a minute.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
Thank you, my friend. Really much, very appreciate.
I see you in ACS.
We'll be there soon.
In Washington.
Yep. I'll remind my listeners and viewers, remember, I got a new Character Coach podcast every Sunday on Apple, Amazon, Spotify, Google. Anywhere you find a podcast, you find the Character Coach podcast. Of course, we have a new Character Coach video every single day. As of the airing of this podcast, we already have the extra video up on cataractcoach.com. Go check it out. And until next time, I'll catch you later.